every month or every several months we have a different theme that we're going through. So in the recordings, when I'm not here or when Carolyn is not here, we play a recording usually around this theme. And right now the theme is the Noble Eightfold Path. Is that correct still? Is everyone still playing recordings on the Noble Eightfold Path? Okay, great. Today I wanted to just offer kind of this high level overview of the path, and even giving a high level, I was starting to prep this, and even giving a high level overview was hard to condense it into into some minutes, due to the amount of minutes that I have here. So we'll see how it goes. I won't actually go into each of the parts of the Noble Path. I will mention all of them, but I won't go into detail. Actually, I've given a talk on it earlier when I did a series on the Four Noble Truths, and it's on the website under resources and then Dharma Talks or something like that. And so it's probably kind of in the lower part of that series or of the talks. And in that talk, I actually explain each factor a little bit, each path factor. And first of all, I want to mention that it's actually that the Noble Eightfold Path is part of the Four Noble Truths, which is kind of one of the cornerstone teachings of the Buddha. And so I'll just name them briefly, just to give the context. And so the first Noble Truth is that there's unsatisfactoriness. The second Noble Truth is that there's a cause for the unsatisfactoriness, which is craving. And then the third Noble Truth is that there is also the end of unsatisfactoriness, or awakening, or Nibbana, called in the Pali language, which is the language in which some of the oldest scriptures were written down in. And then the fourth Noble Truth is the way, or the path, towards the end of this unsatisfactoriness, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. So it's the fourth Noble Truth, basically. And so this Noble Eightfold Path is the main path in Buddhism that can help us to overcome this unsatisfactoriness. And I've used this word unsatisfactoriness now a few times. It's the translation of the word dukkha, and often it's translated as suffering, but it's not really capturing the meaning of the word dukkha, so unsatisfactoriness might be a bit more accurate. So that's why I'm using that word. I won't go into any detail in the translation right now. And so this Noble Eightfold Path is a roadmap, basically, to awakening, to Nibbana, as it's called. And on the way to this awakening, we're also basically becoming a happier person, maybe less stressful, maybe we feel more fulfilled when we walk this path. And not everyone resonates with this goal of awakening, this freedom from suffering. That's what it basically means, is freedom from this unsatisfactoriness. And so sometimes it might be more helpful to think of this path as a path that can help us to cultivate more happiness and more fulfillment in our lives, to deal with stress and deal with difficulty, and to be able to, yeah, to be in this world in a way that feels more satisfying, basically. But whether or not you are interested in awakening or not, if you walk this path, you might end up awakened. So don't be surprised. And so this name, Eightfold Path, already says it right. There's eight steps on this path, or eight path factors, as it's sometimes called. And these eight steps or eight factors are divided into three broad categories. And that's basically, I'll basically go in more into these categories than I'll go into each of these steps. And so the first two steps of the path form the wisdom category. These are wise view and wise intention are the first two steps. The middle three steps of the path form the ethics or virtue category. Wise speech, wise action, and wise livelihood. And then the last three steps form the cultivation or meditation category. So wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. And so I will probably spend most of the time with the ethics or virtue category, the three middle steps of wise speech, action, and livelihood. Because ethics is one of the foundations of our practice. And I just talked a little bit about dana, or generosity. And so dana, generosity, together with ethics and together with meditation, form also kind of a pillar for our practice. And the Buddha would often start teaching people about ethics and virtuous behavior and about generosity even before giving any meditation instructions, because that gives a very fertile ground for meditation. And in the West, we often do this the other way around. We start with meditation, and then at some point we hear about generosity and we hear about ethics. And so the Buddha really emphasized that this ethics, this virtuous behavior, is really necessary, a necessary foundation for our practice, for our meditation. If our ethical behavior is not in the right shape, then our meditation becomes harder. And so this is because unethical actions breed regrets. And so if we've done something that has harmed others or even ourselves, then when we meditate, these regrets around this might arise. And so that's one of the reasons that the Buddha emphasized this ethics so much, because once we start walking this path and we start meditating, we might notice all the, you know, sometimes that actually happens for people in meditation. They start noticing all these things from their past that happened. And it really interferes with the meditation practice, because so much suffering around it and regret. And another aspect of why the Buddha emphasized this is that if we do live an ethical life, where basically ethics is about non-harming, we also feel happier, basically. It's really interesting. If we do good, happiness will follow. If we do bad, so to speak, unhappiness will follow. It's really hard to do bad things and feel happy. And so the beauty of ethics and of virtuous behavior is that it feels good. It feels really good to do good. It feels really wholesome. So it's kind of like, it also feels kind of, can feel even purifying or clean inside if there's ethics present, if there's virtue present. And so the Buddha offered five precepts for lay practitioners. And these are, the first one is the training rule, it's called abstaining from taking life. And it's called a training rule because it's a training. It's not something we need to be good at right away. I mean, taking life might be one of the easier ones to adhere to. It's about learning and making mistakes and then restating our intention to adhere to these training rules. And so the Buddha wasn't like, oh, you have to be like this and you can't be anything else, and if you do it wrong, you go to hell. No, he was like, of course you're going to make mistakes. That's going to happen. And so what we do is we reinstate our intention to adhere to this training rule. And so the first one is abstaining from taking life. And it's, of course, you know, it might be easy to realize, oh yeah, of course I don't want to take the life of another human being, but we might have all killed a mosquito in our lives, or an ant, or a fly, or a cockroach, or, you know. So the Buddha also basically spoke about these kind of beings, all beings, not taking the life of any being. And so that might be a little harder for some people. And it always helps for me to think about, like, all living beings want to live and want to be happy. And so what right do I have to smash their life out of them? You know? And so it also helps sometimes to think about, oh, this fly that is so annoyingly flying around in this room is not necessarily after me, you know? It's just trying to find the exit. It's just trying to get on with his life, trying to, you know, bumping into the window over and over again. So what I try to do is try to help it go outside, maybe open the window, see if I can help it go outside. Or sometimes you can catch insects with a glass and just put them outside instead of killing them, basically. And of course, there are so many different, like, edge cases, like if you have bed bugs or if your house is infested with cockroaches or with termites or whatever. And so this is a really hard one, actually. I was saying this might be the simple one, but if you start thinking about it, it's a hard one. Because it can be almost impossible to avoid it fully in your life. And so then the training rule, the second one, is to abstain from taking what is not given. And so not stealing. Involves refraining taking anything that hasn't been given to you, that's without any permission. So it doesn't involve, like, things that might be, you know, a flower on the road or something. You know, that's okay. It's probably okay to take. But anything that's not given to you, that you don't take it. And on retreat, we also take this precept, and then it's really nice that you know that you can just leave your stuff and no one will take it, you know, because everyone has taken this training rule, and it just creates so much safety. So then the third one is to abstain from sexual misconduct. Also very important. And it really promotes this, you know, this ethical conduct in our relationships. And you can imagine, like, lots of types of sexual misconduct that I probably don't have to name. Some include adultery or sexual exploitation or rape or all these kind of things. And so this is huge, of course. And I mean, maybe none of us is involved in any of this, but in our society, as a greater society, there's a lot of that that's so harmful and creates so much suffering and pain for people. And if everyone would adhere to this rule, it would be so much better, so much safer to be around. And then the training rule, to abstain from false speech. And so honesty and truthfulness are important here. Not lying, not deceiving, not spreading any false information. Sometimes things like around wise speech, which is also one of the steps on the Eightfold Path. So also around no idle chatter or no gossip and that kind of thing. So we can make that even a little broader than just not lying. Like also all the idle chatter and gossip and that kind of thing that we, speech that we sometimes express. Any speech that could possibly harm or that's not very wholesome or very beneficial for anyone, basically. We can take a look at that. Is it actually necessary to say this right now? Can I just maybe refrain from speaking? Can I speak in a more wholesome way? It's a very rich practice ground that we can use in our daily lives. And then the last one is the training rule to abstain from intoxicating drinks and drugs causing heedlessness. So this one is really about clarity of mind. If we take drinks or alcohol and drugs, it clouds the mind. And then we become heedless, the Buddha says. And so, and this heedlessness can cause others harm too. It's not only our own minds that are cloudy, but this heedlessness of that alcohol and drugs can cause can also be a cause for harm in the world. And of course, it's always important to keep on taking your prescribed drugs, even if they cloud your mind. That's not what this precept is about. So it's more about these things that we don't really need and that we do take, that this precept's about. And often the question arises like, oh, what about just one glass of wine or just one beer? You know, it doesn't really cloud my mind. But the Buddha was actually really clear about alcohol in the suttas and about not taking any. That's just my offering of what is in the texts, but you can make up your own mind. Just like with all these precepts, you can look at what is it like for me? How do I want to hold this precept? And so this is a very basic set of trainings that we can undertake in our daily lives that can really empower our practice, really spur us further on the path, greatly improve our ethical conduct and our happiness. And sometimes it just can feel so good to not have harmed the whole day, you know, for as far as you can tell. So, yeah, the Buddha actually encourages us to reflect on our ethical conduct, to reflect on like, oh, I've not engaged any harm. How amazing. And just let that good feeling arise, not as like a, you know, pat on the back and how amazing am I, but more as really as an inspiration for yourself. And the Buddha also says, this is from the suttas, by abstaining from the destruction of life, from taking what is not given, from sexual misconduct, from false speech, from liquor, wine, and intoxicants, the basis for heedlessness, the noble disciple gives to an immeasurable number of beings freedom from fear, enmity, and affliction, and they themselves in turn enjoy immeasurable freedom from fear, enmity, and affliction. So this really contributes to this safety. It's really a safety from fear, enmity, and affliction. This gift that you can give to others in this world. And so this is really the basis of this Noble Eightfold Path, this ethical conduct, this virtue. This non-harming, basically. All these precepts and eventually are about non-harming. And you can even reflect, like, how would you feel around people who adhere to these precepts, who you know adhere to these precepts? You'd feel pretty safe, probably, and okay, and that you know you won't be intentionally harmed, at least, right? I mean, sometimes unintentional harm still happens, and we still need to take responsibility for the harm that we unintentionally cause, of course, but at least we're not intentionally harming. And I guess I forgot to mention in the announcements. So we are actually thinking of holding a small celebration next week on Tuesday. It's almost the Buddha's birthday. It's at full moon day, the full moon of May, which I think is like later in that week, maybe Friday or Saturday or something. Then we celebrate the Buddha's birth, his awakening, and his death. First of all, you can celebrate death. and traditionally at those celebrations, it's called Vesak celebration. We take those precepts, so we'll do that also next week. So if you're there, we'll take these precepts. And so the point on this part of precepts, ethics, conduct, is also about wholesomeness and goodness. And that's kind of a thread throughout all of the eight steps. All of the eight steps, if you actually start to look at what's the basic underlying kind of energy of this precept, it's that it points towards wholesomeness and it points away from unwholesomeness, points towards goodness. I don't really like the word bad, but points away from what's not so good. And so this path, the Buddhism is not only about meditation, it's really about this whole path. And Gregory Kramer is a teacher, and he has this book, A Whole Life Path, which is about the Eightfold Path. And that's basically what it is. It's a whole life path. It's not only like what we do on Tuesday and Friday evenings here. It's something we do in our life. This path is actually has so many practical aspects that we can put into our daily lives, like this ethics aspect, the speech aspect, the aspect of engaging in wholesomeness and turning away from unwholesomeness as much as we can. And then we start to see that this wholesomeness versus unwholesomeness comes up in every moment of our lives. And so this also really ties into the wisdom category of the path, which is the first two steps, wise view and wise intention. And so the wise view is really about seeing, it has different aspects of it. One aspect is seeing what is wholesome actually and what is unwholesome. What leads to wholesomeness, what leads to unwholesomeness. And I think that wholesomeness and unwholesomeness have a lot to do with our underlying intention. So if, for example, I've used this example maybe before, but if we're walking in the forest on the path and we're stepping on a leaf, and under the leaf is an ant, and we basically kill the ant because we stepped on it. But we had no idea, right? Because the leaf was covering this ant, so we couldn't know. So then there was not an intention to kill this ant. But what if there's like an ant running over your kitchen counter and you do shmush? Then there was an intention to kill the ant. So that's the difference. At the first example with the leaf, it's not necessarily wholesome, but it's also not unwholesome. What could be a wholesome example would be if you see the ant on the forest path and you decide not to step on it. You decide to actually move your foot, even though it's right in your path, and you move your foot so that you don't step on it. That's a wholesome intention to not kill, to refrain from killing, which is basically that intention to abstain from killing, that the precept. And a while ago, I was walking on the street, and this car stopped like in the middle of the street. And I was like, "What's this person doing? Like, it's dangerous. You shouldn't stop." And it's just kind of a quiet neighborhood street, but still. The woman came out, and she walked in front of her car, and apparently, then I saw there was a turtle in front of her car, and so she stopped to save the turtle from being run over by the car, and she picked it up and put it on the other side of the road. So, you know, it's a wholesome intention, like care for this little turtle. And so we can look at our intentions. Are they wholesome? Are they unwholesome? That's like a big part of our daily life practice, could be a big part of our daily life practice. Looking at intention, looking at wholesome versus unwholesome. And then, just like I said earlier, there is a difference between intention and impact. Sometimes our intention can be very wholesome. Like sometimes I want to take the insect out, like, and I put the glass, or I put a glass and I put a little piece of paper, and then I have to squish it a little bit onto the, and then it gets stuck between the glass and the, you know, and then it gets harmed. So my intention was pure, but it did harm the insect. So, and then we can see, how can we do it differently next time? Maybe I need to be even more careful, you know? And so we have all these wholesome intentions also in our interactions with others that might not end up very well. You know, we say something that might not land very well for someone else that might have a nice, beautiful intention behind it. And if it doesn't land, maybe we can make amends, maybe we can say sorry anyways. And so then, real briefly, the last three steps are the meditation part. And it's kind of also on purpose not to spend too much time there, because that's what we do most, right? Meditation is the thing that we do most. The other parts maybe not as clearly present in our practice. And so these the three steps in the meditation category are wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. And the interesting thing is that wise effort is very much about wholesome and unwholesome as well. It's really like literally about cultivating wholesomeness and letting go of unwholesomeness. That's what wise effort is about when you look at the text. And sometimes, you know, we have also a different type of effort, which is the amount of energy we put into our practice, which is a different type of effort. The type of effort in the Noble Eightfold Path is about looking at wholesomeness and unwholesomeness and trying to cultivate as much wholesomeness as we can and letting go of as much unwholesomeness. And then, of course, mindfulness, we've practiced that tonight. The mindfulness and concentration, I don't want to go too deep into it, but when we practice like we did tonight, we both cultivate mindfulness and concentration. So if we just practice like we did tonight, we're basically cultivating this part of the path. And we can also be mindful even during daily life activities. So we can even bring mindfulness into our daily lives. Mindful of doing dishes, mindful of walking to your car in a little bit, mindful of going to the bathroom, you know, anything. We can be mindful of anything. And it's also what the Buddha actually tried to teach, mindfulness of not only when we are sitting and walking formally, but also when we all the other things we do. And so I want to offer this phrase by the Buddha as to close this with this talk. And so I think it's kind of a summary of this Noble Eightfold Path. He says, and this is actually on our website, on the main page, doing no evil, undertaking the good, purifying one's mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. Mm-hmm.